This is courtesy of Curtis Conkey. How you been?
I've been okay. It's been busy, just busy. Jackie just schedules one thing almost on top of another.
Okay, thank you. I will take a roll call. Do we have Boulder City Hospital on the line? Do we have anyone from Dignity Health? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, do we have anyone from HCA? Do we have Michael Callahan Federal Hospital? Do we have North Vista? Do we have Rossin Hill or Southern Nevada Zone as well?
I'm good. Are you ready?
Dr. Allison?
Yes.
Perfect, thank you. Do we have anyone from UHS Valley Health System other than Robert?
Sam Kaufman from Henderson Hospital.
Ryan Jensen from Desert Springs.
Thank you. That was Sam Kaufman and Ryan Jensen?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And do we have a VA, Peggy Hearns?
Yeah, this is Peggy.
Perfect, thank you. We do. Mona Vista is here. Robert, we don't have four. I only have four systems represented, I need six.
UMC.
So how many are we short, Edie?
Two.
Who would we need, Dignity?
I need Dignity, or I need someone from HCA.
Okay.
Or Boulder, or Vince from North Vista.
Okay. Does Mesquite Hospital participate?
Mm-hmm. We can proceed with informational and listen for beeps.
Yeah.
And hopefully two more people join.
Okay. I think we might, however, for the proposed advisory board schedule, is just make an executive decision to have the next one on January 22nd, if you all agree, and then bring that back to a full board vote.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to call the meeting to order for the October 23rd Facilities Advisory Board meeting for the Southern Nevada Health District. So beginning with public comment, I would ask if there's any public comment related to those items that are appearing on the agenda. Do we have any public here that would like to speak? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll move on to adoption of the agenda. Can't do that quite yet, but I've got a few text messages out to folks to join the call. So. Edie, if you could send that to Adam Rudd,
he's okay.
Going to dial in. Hopefully that will bring us to quorum.
Okay. Usually Stephanie Miller shows up for him.
Okay. So moving on, let's, until we get a full quorum, we'll come back to adopting the agenda and the consent agenda. What I would like to move on, an important topic once we get quorum, is to review item number five, discuss the board vacancies and part of our issue with making quorum. So we'll come back to that. We will move to number two under agenda item number five, discuss and approve the proposed 2019 meeting schedule. And we want to make sure we get these on everyone's calendars.
That's the one I think we just want to approve.
Someone just joined.
Okay, January.
Let's see who. Who just called in?
I'm Adam Rudd with Southern Health.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
Five?
We need one more.
Okay.
Thanks, Adam. So for that, we can come back to it, or we can just make the executive decision to have the next one on January 22nd and vote on it then, or we can send out an Outlook invitation with all four of these meetings pending a final approval by you all.
Yes, and I like that idea, Dr. Eisner. We do need to at least get our January meeting on the books, which is proposed the Tuesday of January 22nd, 2019, which is the fourth Tuesday of that month. And all of our meetings are proposed for that date, but we'll go ahead and put that on everybody's calendar to be able to have that meeting.
And with your permission, I'll just ask Edie to send out all four meetings pending final approval by the board in January.
Yeah, that sounds good, Dr. Eisner, and we'll proceed that way and then come back in January to get the rest of the meetings approved for 2019. But I want to get that out earlier than later because of calendars filling up and making sure that we have a quorum. With that, I'm going to move us on to item number three. Under agenda item number five is receive a report.
Either place.
Regarding facility collaboration with Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department initiative from Lieutenant Kate Chio, and he's also accompanied by Captain Scott from Metro. Welcome, gentlemen, and we appreciate you being here and talking to our committee. If you will, introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and the floor is yours.
Sure. My name is Lieutenant Nate Chio, A-T-E-C-H-I-O.
My name is Captain William Scott, C-O-T-T. I'm the Bureau Commander for the Support Operations Bureau with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. So thank you for the time here and letting us come and speak to you guys. We wanted to give you an update and let you make you guys aware of what the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is doing in the area of mental health and the opioid crisis that's in the valley. Myself and Captain Scott are assigned to the Support Operations Bureau. Within that bureau is the Office of Community Engagement. In the Office of Community Engagement, we've launched a program this past June called the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. And what that basically does is, in order to reduce the footprint in our jails and try to alleviate the criminal justice system, we're instructing officers to contact when they come into contact with low-level narcotics offenders or nonviolent offenders involved in prostitution, narcotics, things of that nature, if they can identify there's a substance abuse a cause for the criminal act, instead of taking them to jail and putting them in the criminal justice system, we divert them to our social services, and we're partnering with several of the social services here in Clark County. It has been a soft launch. We just launched it in June of this year, and we're working with behavioral bridges and CBH, and we're also working with Health Assembly Nevada. So that's in the process of being worked out. There are still some kinks that we're working out, but that is something that we're doing to try to address the opioid crisis. And the other item I wanted to bring to your attention, and I'm asking for your guys' help, is that we have identified the legal 2000 system here in Clark County is really broken, to be quite blunt. We deal with it on the front end as first responders, dealing with these people. Prior to this assignment, as a patrol lieutenant, I can remember distinctly several instances where my patrol cops on my shift would L2K a suspect, and then they would be back out and we'd have to L2K them again within an 8-hour shift. There's been several of our officer-involved shootings that involved L2K patients that have been L2K'd within a week's time several times, and then due to their behavior and the criminal acts they're committing, we get involved in officer-involved shooting, and unfortunately we have to shoot the suspect. It's come to our sheriff's attention. It's one of his priorities. And in response to that, myself and Captain Scott have been tasked with trying to create a mental health unit within the police department. Now, with that mental health unit, we see that the L2K problem is prevalent, and we want to try to reach those people that get L2K'd, but no one ever follows up with them. For our department alone, we average about 2,000 L2Ks a month. But we're not the only people that can L2K somebody. There's a myriad of other service providers, including the fire department, AMR, and other people that can L2K individuals there. And we're trying to figure out a way to get that information from the hospitals. because we're, and it's not to target them, not to put cases on them, it's strictly to offer them follow-up, voluntary, send officers and clinicians out to them to try to get them back into treatment. Because what our whole goal is if we can get these guys, these suspects into treatment, then there's a rare likelihood that we'll ever have to deal with them again. The unit is still in the planning stages. We did get the green light from our sheriff to go ahead and plan it out. So myself and Captain Scott are in the midst of that. Our projected date right now is sometime next year. But that's why I want to get in the front end of this and talk with the people here at this table and on the phone to see how we can partner with you guys, because I'm sure you guys see it firsthand also, the issues you guys are having in emergency rooms and the trauma centers. How can we partner together so that we can try to reduce the number of L2Ks, at least get these L2K customers some wraparound services from our mental health providers and our substance abuse providers? There's a big issue with HIPAA. I understand that. So I'm kind of leaving it up to the forum here to try to help me navigate this, because that's not my area of expertise. How do we get the information from these patients?
Let me just, if I can, if I just chime in, I think we're not looking at all of the L2K offenders who are actually held on the legal 2000 holds. What we're looking at is those chronic L2K offenders that we in the law enforcement field really come into contact with on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, where that we've seen that the percentage of officer-involved shootings or critical use of forces on those individuals we see are rising. So what we're really, the genesis behind this is really to identify those individuals who we come in contact with on a daily basis, and try to get in the front of some assistance for them so that we can help them help themselves, so that we can reduce the footprint of some of the officer-involved shootings that we get involved in and some of the use of forces. Because some of those folks that are in the legal 2000 system, they might be just going through a one-time critical incident in their lives. They seek some type of assistance and they're okay. But there are those ones that we have encountered who have been legal 2000 22 times within a matter of a year. And those are the ones that we see we've had officer-involved shootings with. So in order to reduce the officer-involved shooting and to save lives, we're trying to identify some type of strategy to receive information on just those individuals in hopes of getting some of our clinicians and some of our behavioral health care professionals to go out and seek assistance to those individuals. So that's really what we're trying to do.
Any comments from those on the phone or want to speak to how we can help Metro with this particular issue that I think impacts all of us? You know, it sounds like it's more continuity of care and getting those patients in the right setting so they don't bounce back for the facilities, but also Metro that's often dealing with them face-to-face in their communities. So,
Rob, yeah, kind of being able to identify those that fall into that category you just described, we may not know which ones have been L2K more than once, unless they're brought in by Metro, then you would know that name. But I think the legal question on HIPAA, if they're currently in L2K, and this is a referral for treatment, that probably needs some legal guidance on that, but technically you can release information to anyone that's part of the treatment process or plan. So while they're L2K, they're not capable of handling themselves at the moment, so therefore you're referring to an agency that's going to try to help them with some psychological resources, where once you release them from that L2K, that probably becomes a little more difficult, because if they're not voluntarily seeking that treatment, then if you're relying on billing collection, a few things like that, you can do with information. So that would be interesting for legal to do that. But
right. I know we have our legal looking at it. We have an existing list. Our crisis intervention team actually really keep a running log, and we see that list. And that's what's concerning to us, is that we see the list, we see the number of contacts that our personnel has had contact with these individuals and how many times they've been legal 2000, but there's no follow-up. And then we have to go out and have that, another contact with them, and unfortunately, turns into an officer involved shooting or critical use of force incident, is really what we're trying to do. And we know that our list is really not a, I mean, it is a valid list, because we have come in contact with those individuals, but like Lieutenant Chio was saying earlier, is that we know that those folks have probably been legal 2000 from some other type of source here in the valley, and that's where we're actually missing that connection. We're not doing follow-up on it, in the law enforcement world. You know, our job is really just to ensure that the public is safe, and that that person is safe from himself or herself. But I think we could do more, because as we see in law enforcement now, the paradigm shift is really aggressive towards new ways in policing, and we find ourselves is that we can't incarcerate everybody, or we can't incarcerate legal 2000 everybody, because it's really not working. It's tax costing millions of tax dollars. Right now we have, we consider Clark County Detention Center as the biggest mental health facility in the state. We hold 4,000 individuals within that Clark County Detention Center at any given time. It costs $155 per day to actually hold a person per day. And if you think about the average time a low-level nonviolent offender spends inside the Clark County Detention Center, it's anywhere between 23 and 28 days that individual is staying inside that facility. So if you really do the math on that, you can really see that the cost to the taxpayers is really staggering when it relates to the mental health folks that we have in the jail. And what can we do from a law enforcement perspective to partner with our community to really address this issue?
Any questions for those that are on the phone? Or I would like to make a motion for perhaps to task some of our...
You can't.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But if I can, may I make a comment if Adam doesn't have one?
Oh, go ahead, Adam.
I don't know if he does.
And I'm sorry, I missed the Adam part.
Oh, no, we didn't know if you had a comment or not, but...
I don't. You know, I think for us, my challenge is, you know, we're opening a psych hospital, and, you know, we're fearful of, you know, how do you manage the LTK and all of that whole process. I mean, it's just, I feel for law enforcement, and the state, the city, and the local area. I don't know that there is a really good answer for anybody that would be happy to partner with any way we can. I do feel bad for them.
And I think that's, you know, maybe taking away my attempt to make a motion is, I think there's certainly a willingness from this committee to help. And perhaps we can have a smaller group work with you directly that's representative of the major health systems, but also our behavioral health providers as well. I think to Rob's point, I think this is continuity of care. I would ask, are you just seeing non-compliance, or is it an uninsured population we're dealing with, or a certain demographic that would perhaps we could target to help make sure that they're getting these wraparound services that are available?
I think it's a combination of all of the above. There are some that their psych medicines just don't make them feel good, so they go off of them, or they start using illicit drugs, and that never ends well for them. And there's some that they go to the L2K, they get L2K, and they know the system, so they say the right things to whoever the attending physician is, and then they're out of the emergency room doors within a couple hours. And the concerning part for us, which is why with the introduction of standalone emergency rooms that are popping up all over the valley, now the footprint has become even bigger, because now we have no idea where they're going. Before, we could kind of guess that a majority of ours would go to UNC, depending on the side of town, Sunrise, we get a lot of them North Vista. But now, with all these other emergency rooms and the diversion and all that other stuff, when you guys are over capacity, we have no idea where these L2Ks are, how we can capture that data, how we can get our mental health partners to say, hey, John Doe was L2K last night by the fire department or by AMR, and they went to Sunderland Hospital. But we know that he's been L2K four times in the last 3 weeks. We need to go out there and see what's going on and then try to get him some wraparound services. That's what our goal is. That's what the mission for our new unit is going to be, is to get those people those wraparound services. And we know it's going to be a little bit of a heavy lift. Houston Police Department has the same model, and they're seeing a lot of success. In Houston, they actually have a whole mental health division. Captain, lieutenant, four sergeants, 28 officers that all address mental health and homelessness. So we're starting small and trying to hope, but we see the need for it here. Because if we don't get ahead of it now, it's just going to be, it's heartbreaking for everybody when we see someone that is just going through a mental health crisis and it ends really bad, either in suicide or an officer-involved shooting where now we've lost a life and maybe we could have been there. There could have been an intervention earlier today and he would still be alive.
I've been to my own Northwest Hospital.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. Mr. Mason.
No problem.
So let me ask Lieutenant Chio, how would you envision this unit operating? Would it be more real time or follow up discharge? How would you want to be, how is the model going to look as far as notification that we've got? Somebody that perhaps is in a cycle where they are, all those things you described, medication management or non-compliance or...
Ideally, what I'd like to see happen is that we would have a mental health database within the unit. And anytime a health provider receives an L2K patient, they would have a number or a fax or something to call just to give some basic information on this one person. We would have analysts at our station within my unit that would compile that information. With that information, then they could task our mental health providers and our officers, because we're not going to send our mental health providers out by themselves for safety-wise to protect them. They would partner up with our officers and they would go out and make contact with these chronic L2K offenders once they've been identified. Now, to Captain Scott's point, the one-time L2K, we're not really concerned about them. It's the chronic L2K offenders that have a history of it. There's data that we have that I think the most we saw was one guy L2K 24 times in a month. 24 times a month, and that's just from the police department. Who knows how many other times he was L2K by medical calls, because we don't respond on medical calls if it's just a straight medical call. And once that data is to us, then we partner with our mental health providers, go out there and knock on their door, try to offer them assistance, and we'll probably get a few doors shut in our face, but it's just a consistent offering to try to get that person into services.
Is the data showing, you said that Houston's seen significant impact in the community? Is there, clearly they've committed to this in Houston, what kind of results are you seeing, or are they seeing out there that will benefit Las Vegas?
Significant results. When I actually got sent down to Houston to meet with their command staff, meet their officers, see how they modeled their program. Their officer-involved shootings involving mental health patients decreased significantly. The number of mental health patients that were involved in that were incarcerated was decreased significantly. Because in conjunction with their approach, which is what we're trying to adopt with the LEAD program and with this new mental health unit, the officers out there, the culture changed for the actual officers on the ground. Once they knew a guy was had some mental health issues, they had an avenue to divert him away from the criminal justice system, or away just from L2K. Or at least be able to go, okay, you know what, you're a hazard to yourself, we're going to L2K you, but then that officer would get on the phone and call the mental health unit, hey, this is somebody that you guys might want to talk to. So once that happened and that culture changed, and it took a few years according to the captain that was over there, but they are the model right now for law enforcement for mental health units.
It'd be great to see how they handled that HIPAA thing, whether they just went to the, there's a CMS office in San Francisco that covers Las Vegas, and they just gave an opinion, whatever you want to call it, and a pass, so to speak, to do this. It says it's part of the federal, the L2K is a federal requirement or guideline, state agencies, it's part of the continuum of care,
this is a waiver that, you know, as long as that information is used appropriately, HIPAA is really protecting the misuse of public or private protected health information, not the good use of it for giving things like that. So I just thought this is a waiver of some sort of acknowledgement from CMS that hospitals can go in to a database and submit it electronically to a repository that you guys can track and trend and the zeros and the ones kind of things you're throwing out.
And that's ideally what we would love to see. That way we could at least, we don't want to, I have a big vision that I don't want to miss anybody, but I know that's kind of a big vision, but I would hate to have a guy at my house go, oh, he's only L2K once or twice by LVMPD, and we missed the 30 other times he was L2K by the fire department or AMR or another health professional.
That's a comment. My name is Curtis Ohashi. This is my first advisory board meeting, and I'm relatively new to the community. I have 9 weeks in, but the problem you've described is a universal one, and I've had the opportunity over the course of my career of working with law enforcement in other markets to develop a strategy to deal with the mentally ill population. Unfortunately, I think developing a strategy is beyond the scope of this meeting, so I'd like to volunteer my services either in my role as this committee or personally to help you work on developing a strategy.
Thank you very much. We'll take all the help we can get.
And thank you, Curtis. And that was kind of going to be my suggestion for the next step. I think certainly a willingness.
You can't make a motion now.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
We have
to. Thank you, guys. You know, unless somebody else wants to make the motion out there, but I would like to see if there are some members of our committee that can perhaps work directly with Captain Scott and Lieutenant Chio, and thank you, Curtis, that I think we all have a vested interest in this, especially if law enforcement, some of the outcomes that you talked about in reducing this number of shootings is extremely important to our community. I would like to see if there's any community, that any active members of the committee that would like to participate and working directly with them, perhaps reaching out to some of the Houston hospitals on how they got around the HIPAA piece and as far as continuity care. But is there anybody interested in the committee that would be willing to help out with these two gentlemen?
I think it would be good to propose this through the NHA as well.
Okay.
You know, just because it's 26 hospitals, acute facilities, you know, behavioral health, academic hospitals. We need some sort of a communication piece that we can get it to Bill and bring that up at the next NHA policy meeting.
So any members on the phone that would be interested in helping or volunteering to have a couple of meetings with Metro regarding this subject?
This is Peggy at the VA. I'm not the expert in that area, but I could sure bring somebody with me that might be interested in helping.
Okay.
And this is Ryan Jensen at Desert Springs Hospital, I think. We can also help out with this.
Great. Well, I will take you all up on that, and I don't know if I need to make a motion regarding that, but I'm just looking for some volunteers to maybe continue the conversation in this as well. And I like Rob's suggestion is that as an association, we can certainly bring this up as an issue that we should think that the association should take up as well. I know that the state's looking at the L2K process. There's some new players regarding that within the state level on the L2Ks and looking at the requirements around that. But I appreciate everybody volunteering. And again, I don't think we need to.
No, I don't think you need a motion, but I if I may comment.
Sure.
So I'm on the Southern Nevada Behavioral Health Board, which is supposed to be a board looking at the state mental health programs and delegating the authority down to regional levels. Assemblyman Yeager is the chairman of that board. Captain Schmidt is on that board. And so we've been coming up with some proposals. L2Ks have been very big in the presentations that we've had. And so just as the health district, we want to be involved with you. An example is I met with Tim Birch, who used to be with the Department of Social Services, left and now is back. He is looking at perhaps some housing options that we can work with him on, providing some health services with him as he provides health housing options. So, you press this, and there are a whole bunch of pieces that come out, the whack-a-mole kind of thing, and there's the opioid and other drugs. There is certainly chronic mental illness, homelessness, and so on. So I think that if you're interested, we can get social services involved in a continuing conversation with all of us about this. And we're very interested as well.
Okay.
As a district.
You will appreciate Captain Smith as well on this.
Yeah, I figured you knew her.
Captain Smith was on our committee to, and this is the recommendation, the mental health unit was the recommendation that came out of that committee, and she was one of the forefront of that committee, so we appreciate any help we can get.
The other issue, and I'm not sure I can promise this, is that we're already in CCDC looking at communicable diseases. But that's for us to be able to expand our presence there, we need to get a grant from either CCDC or the county to be able to do that. And we are doing that now, but there is nothing in that that looks at mental health issues. But there ought to be a way that we can work with the captain, Captain Schmidt, and others to look at some referrals to outside mental health agencies, and I don't know that we can be the ones to follow up, but the medical services that you contract with, that Metro contracts with for the hospital ought to be able to help do that too. So I think that there are various ways that we might be able to help, and we'd be committed to helping you with that and working with the hospitals who are interested as well.
Thank you very much, everyone that shows so much support. Myself and Captain Scott are going to leave a bunch of our cards here, and then look forward to working with all of you. And as it progresses and our unit starts forming up, we'll keep you guys all in the loop on where we're at and how it's going to look.
Great. We'll certainly invite you back. We'll make sure your contact information is provided to all the members of the committee, and then we look forward to working with you in the future.
Fantastic.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, now that kind of moving back to the top of the agenda, we'll...
Someone joined.
Thanks.
Did someone join the call recently?
I dropped. This is Vince with Northwood, so I dropped off some greetings out there.
Okay.
Thank you, Vince. Thanks for rejoining again. So I'm going to move back to item number 3, adoption of our agenda for October 23rd. Can I get a motion to adopt the agenda?
Make a motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Moving to item number 4, our consent agenda, which encompasses our minutes from the last meeting on July 24th. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda from July 24th? For the minutes.
Would you like to make a public motion?
Can I get a second?
Okay.
Thank you, Vince. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Moving to item number 5, under reports, discussion, and action. This is the Facility Advisory Board may take necessary action for any of the items in this section. Item number 1, review, discuss, declare, and approve possible board vacancies pursuant to the FAB bylaws, section 6. This is a discussion we want to have regarding attendance to the meeting, look at the membership. I do, Curtis, want to welcome you first, first and foremost. Monta Vista has always been a very active member of this committee, and we appreciate you here and joining the committee. So do I need to get a motion to approve?
No, he accepted the invitation, okay. So he's on.
Okay.
Thank you,
Curtis.
Thank you very much.
Really, the items that we want to discuss is we've had some non-participation within the committee, which obviously makes us struggle to make quorum, and obviously the numerator denominator becomes a challenge on attendance. Mainly from the Dignity Health System. We have not had, I'm looking at the agenda, we've not had representation from the Dignity Hospitals well over a year, and we have certainly reached out. They've been informed, they've been noticed, that they've been invited, both on phone calls but also email. But I want to have a discussion regarding their membership on this committee. Again, it's been difficult to have a quorum, also to include them in the conversations and making decisions becomes a challenge when our bylaws say that we have to have representation So really the discussion is around, do they become, they remain members of the committee. So I'm going to open it up to discussion for those on the phone and in presence. But again, I've been looking at their attendance, and it's been really non-participation at this committee. So I want to open up the comment, should anybody want to have a, make a motion or have a discussion related to their attendance and participation of this committee?
So we have the flexibility to structure our membership?
I would assume so, but the one concern I have is I believe they have three hospitals, which is a significant proportion of the healthcare, both throughout the valley, but in particular in the Henderson, Blue Diamond area. I just whispered to Edie to ask her if she's done, and I know Edie, I know she already has, I didn't even have to ask her, whether she's tried everything she can to get them to participate, and she has. I think, Mason, you know her as well, not as well as I do, but pretty well. So I think that it becomes a long-term issue if you don't eliminate them. I'm just concerned about what representation will we not have.
Is there a way to make that party an ex officio member for a period of time until attendance, they can attend the meetings and participate, but a non-voting member for a period of...
Edie's looking at Heather right now.
They would just need to be removed and placed back on.
And then just... They demonstrated whatever, the same discussion 6 or 9 or 10 months, 12 months from now, as they've been in every meeting since last 7 months, they'd like to come back on the committee.
And as you probably know, they have the closest hospital, if you want to call it that, to us right here. They're just down 3 blocks from us for that small hospital that's on, is it Charleston or Sahara and Decatur?
And all this we do is allow us a better opportunity for a quorum.
Yes. The lower the amount of systems, the less quorum required. So, there was a discussion of Laura Henham, but she's not CEO. She's the... I have her title over the micro hospitals. Yeah.
So how many systems do we have? 11?
We have 11 now. We had 12. We did remove Mesa View.
But if you remove one, you still have to have 6.
Yeah. And still need...
You still need 6.
Removing Dignity doesn't change the quorum at this.
Unfold it to 6.
Yeah.
Gives me 50%.
I still would need 6 with 10 or 11 systems. It lowered it removing Mesa View from 12, so the requirement was 7. But right now, we would need to knock off 2 to change quorum. So if Dignity, we can get them to come, or if you want to appoint Laura Henham as a delegate, or designee, we do allow designees.
Sure. So I think the items for discussion, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead on the phone.
Yeah, I just think that the micro hospital lady, and I forgot her name, that you guys are talking about, is she's coming to the hospital association. It might be worth a shot to see if she would come.
She's attended several times.
You know, she traveled to Reno a few weeks ago, so I mean, I think she is going to be active in the community. I think that of the Dignity folks, she thinks to be responding to the hospital association, I think.
Thank you, Adam. And well said. I think Laura is engaged, you know, and one of the suggestions was to appoint Laura as the representation for the Dignity Health System. I've reached out to her personally. She's come at my request to the meetings. She's just not the designated FAB member, but if we want to make that a motion and circle back with Laura to represent the Dignity System, I think she does a good job. Again, I've reached out to the Dignity members on the list to try to get their participation, but it's a struggle. So I guess there's 2 motions, or at least 2 ideas discussed. Removing them and then resetting whether they join us back at a later point where they have representation and then they have a designee for the system. Or do we move forward with appointing Laura Henham as the representative for the Dignity Health System?
So right now, if someone comes that's not a CEO from the system, if there's only a non-CEO for a whole system, that doesn't count from a voting standpoint?
They're allowed to vote.
Okay. So why wouldn't, so I guess we could just acknowledge that the, I don't know what her title is, but she's technically over the four facilities. I mean, they are acute licensed hospitals, so it's her as the appropriate designated request of four that can attend, that can be recognized as the system, and we just try that?
Ask her if she's willing to do that.
To do that, yeah. And so we would accept that as the designated person to represent that system.
So we'll go ahead, we can always use your help, but we'll go ahead and invite her.
She's the CFO.
Chief Financial Officer.
Yes. Chief Strategic Officer of Dignity Health Systems.
That's her current?
That's her current, that's her title in January when she attended.
In January? Because I think I've always, she's represented herself as the Chief Executive Officer for the neighborhood hospitals.
Yeah.
So that may have been an older title.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Why don't we check with her and get back to you? We can just give you a call.
I agree. It's good to have on the committee and represent, but. Yeah. Any more discussion on that topic?
Yes.
So do we want to make a motion to, if she accepts that, since we had a call now to all of the representatives, having her acceptance of the position?
If you would like, I think that would be appropriate.
Yeah, so Vince, I think that's an appropriate motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Count on you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. Thank you, Vince, for making that motion, and we'll circle back with Laura Hedham after this week.
And then you have one more left here.
Okay.
So Robert Vickery is no longer there. I can't find anyone. Are they still in business?
Is West Care still in business?
Anybody? Yesterday.
I got an invoice a few months back. I don't know if to pay it.
Why don't we research that and get back to you?
Well, why don't we, I think we're all, you know, assuming the direction West Care is going, but we'll circle back to make sure that they're still in business. I believe that they've got some of their funding through this year, through the state, in the county, but not the facilities. So we'll circle back and report on that next time. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to number two, under agenda item number five, discuss and approve the proposed 2019 meeting schedule. Hopefully everyone has that, but if they don't, I will read those dates. We certainly want to get those out and posted, but essentially it's the fourth Tuesday on a quarterly basis, starting with January 22nd, 2019, which is a Tuesday. All meetings will start to continue, will continue to begin at 3 o'clock. My goal is to keep those to an hour for everyone. I think I've delivered on that. April 23rd, 2019, July 23rd, 2019, and October 22nd, 2019. Anyone have an issue with those dates, or can I get a motion to formalize that as the 2019 Facility Advisory Board meeting schedule?
I make a motion to approve that 2019 meeting schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Second.
Who was that second, please?
This is Sam Mason.
Oh, thank you, Sam. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, everyone. Okay, moving on to item number four, Dr. Iser is going to talk about antibiograms.
So we, and I will apologize to you from our meeting before this meeting, is that you do participate through Quest. So your community involvement that you bring with you from your previous assignment has been fulfilled. So we have had some issues trying to get all of our hospitals to participate in our antibiogram. Adam, I did have a discussion with Todd, who directed us to work with the laboratory director for HCA, and we've been working to do that. I'll ask Arturo to come up to the front so that we can have a brief discussion. introduce yourself.
Welcome, Arturo. If you would introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Arturo Moreto, I'm DPD Military Surveillance Coordinator.
So Arturo has been one of our leads on putting together our anti-biogram, and I've asked them to do it at least twice a year for the foreseeable future. Most places do it once a year. Your individual hospitals may do that. But what we need is the leads from your laboratories to get us the information. HCA hasn't really participated, but Todd told me that he would direct the laboratory director to do that. What success have we had with that, may I ask?
We have sent email requests to the laboratory director, and we're waiting for a response.
And so I did ask Arturo to send a copy of that request for the next request to both Todd and to me. But Adam, if you could help us to follow up, we'd appreciate it. And then there has been an issue with some of the UMC leads, and that issue is?
It was a gap for a couple of weeks on that data transmission, but I think we had enough data points to release the reports that we did.
And then the third hospital was?
That was on reporting, case reporting.
So everything is okay now. So really it's HCA, and we'll continue to follow up on that. A couple of weeks ago at the Nevada State Medical Association meeting, I had brought in a gentleman from CDC who talked about antibiotic stewardship. I did an hour's presentation, and so we'll continue to follow up on this. Washoe County, which to you is where Reno is, has been doing one a year. We do actually two or three or four different ones every 6 months, one for adolescents or kids. And go ahead.
We also have it by facility type. So if it's an inpatient, outpatient facility,
long-term,
and you can, yeah, and long-term cares also. You can also query depending on the species of the organism that you're looking at. We're trying to promote the product also for you, so.
So we would like to continue that development, and we'll continue to work with you all, and particularly with HCA, to fill in that gap. That is a big gap to have those three hospitals not participating. But Rob, as you know, you've got all six of your hospitals. I don't think that your hospital in Pahrump does, but I don't know if there's a reason why it shouldn't, since there are the cross referral patterns, and that's the only hospital for hundreds of miles going west of here. So we might want to talk to you about that as well. And I don't have, I think that if we can help our rural counties help them by helping them to look at their antibiograms, we'd appreciate it. One of the things that we haven't really talked about here is what can we do to make this antibiogram more useful? Can we develop an app or something for physicians who are doing rounds in the hospital or long-term care facilities, and we can look at doing that. But that was the brunt of this discussion, unless you have something else to add.
Nothing to add. Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the update. Moving on to item number five.
You can stay up here for
yes,
that.
That's why.
Okay. We have again, but discuss and recommend facility participation in public health disease report. Dr. Eisen?
I'll turn it over to Arturo, but I think what this issue is how do we get better reporting on reportable diseases to us from the hospital systems. But Arturo, would you like to address this too?
Absolutely. Thank you for giving me the opportunity again. We do a great job, just so you know, Sarah, but it's tying back everything that we do in public health, trying to intervene early on in terms of early indicators for some kind of cluster or something that we have to respond fast. A lot of the reporting happens right now manually. Someone has to pass it over, and this is case reporting. So we're getting ELRs, and ELRs don't always initiate an investigation. We have to get the case reporting also. And then at the end of it also is getting back to understanding who's affected in the population. We're missing a lot of information in ELRs. So the case reporting is what ties it back to understanding who's affected in the population. So in the current format that we have online reporting, which is not the most easily, I think, maybe it's a design issue that we have to work on, we're working on right now. But it's not used, so a lot of times we're getting paper forms. And these paper forms, one, they are hard to process, and two, it's not consistent from facility to facility. We have a lot of reporting from some facilities, I'm not sure if you want to bring it up later, but complete lack of reporting. But also we have remote access to some of this EMRs, which is not queryable, so it's really hard to do anything in terms of batch processing. So just to fight back on the problem itself, one, we're not understanding who's affected because it's just lab. So we can count the number of cases, but we don't really understand who the population is, demographic, gender, we have the age distribution, but if it's a female, it's affected. If it's a condition that affects a reproductive age group and we don't have the pregnancy status of the person that's affected, we cannot do a follow-up. So a lot of things ties back to how can we respond in a timely manner. You can take an example for a test case investigations. We really need the symptoms reported to us. If we don't have the symptoms, then we cannot say if it's a case or not, so we don't investigate the case. So we end up missing the case that we could have, you know, intervened in a timely manner. So we have a lack of reporting from some facilities. We have remote access to their EMR, but because we cannot query their database, we can just only search by name. It's not as meaningful as reporting itself. Reporting by itself is something, access to remote access is another thing. So we're trying to get providers to report electronically with ECR. Anyone who uses Epic or Cerner can trigger that for us. And we have a very good informatics team that's more, you know, more than happy to work with any provider in terms of initiating that. That would cut back on the staff time that it takes for facilities to report, because it's electronic. Two, it would give us an early detection method for case report, case investigations, and make it complete for us in terms of the understanding the complete picture of who's affected in the community also.
So just as a reminder, with the HIPAA, regulations essentially that public health has an exemption for these kinds of diseases. So we absolutely can access your records, but we need you to let us do that. And the only ones, you and UNLV are the only ones on Epic that I know of down here in Southern Nevada. What
or is
Cerner. Yeah, you're on Cerner. And
it's called HCS. It's a small psychiatric-based EMR.
Gotcha. Okay, so can we follow up directly with the members with where Arturo and staff see that there's a lack? I think you know that we're usually on top of the bad list and at the bottom of the good list, and this is where congenital syphilis has us back on the top of the bad list. And we're going to look at other ways to address congenital syphilis. We're going to start working with Turo and other providers for the homeless population to try to get some sampling, go out and try to do some sampling for pregnancy tests as well as for STDs like syphilis, so that we can, if we can find someone, we can get them into care earlier, and then the baby won't be born with congenital syphilis. They will have been exposed, but may not have the facial abnormalities and the other intellectual disabilities. So this is a multi-pronged approach for us to do our job to try to prevent the transmission of disease.
No, I would encourage you to reach out to the membership, but also maybe there's a re-education, because it sounds like there's either lack of reporting or no reporting. So certainly addressing the quality offices and the infectious disease offices of those organizations, I would encourage you to do that. Chair and Vice Chair can help link you with those members.
So communication went out on this a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Was there an authorization agreement or form for that, or is it more just a communicative piece that asked about? I remember this got kind of escalated through the system up to corporate back down. I think it said, well, we get the information anyway, eventually it gets through the reporting process. This just gave you more concurrent review or access. But was there an actionable item, like an agreement to sign, an authorization to allow that database?
In terms of reporting, or you mean in terms of electronic reporting?
Electronic reporting.
Yeah, electronic reporting does not need to give us access. You just have to turn your system to report that based on certain conditions that are meeting the requirements. whether it's an ICD-10 code or a loan code based on lab or genomic code or treatment code that you put in, depending on what triggers that we set, it will automatically trigger for us to receive the lab, just like the EMR. So it does not, we don't need to do that, but in terms of remote EMR access, we have access with UMC, we have access with Summerlin, but it's a person search feature. It does not, I cannot query in it. So I cannot query based on diseases.
I can see what that was. I remember some going around.
So we'll, I think Arturo hears that he has basic permission to contact each one of the systems individually to see what, how to do this and to proceed.
Yes, please do. I think we can certainly help with that, and we certainly don't want to miss any cases out there and try to move us off that list in the right direction both ways. Thank you. Thank you, Arturo.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number six, receive and discuss legislative updates from Dr. Advisor?
Yeah, so we'll wait for Bill probably for January because I think we'll have a much better idea what the BDRs will be related to hospitals and so on. The big one that's going forward for us is this Public Health Improvement Fund, and the Urban Health Committee has agreed to put forward a BDR that would fund the local health and the state health department at $5 per capita. It may end up being not more, but it may end up being less than that, $1 per capita up to that. So if we got $5 per capita here in Southern Nevada, we would now have the property tax income that we had 10 years ago and that we haven't had for 10 years since the downturn in the economy, and then the capping in the last 2 or 3 years of property tax. So hopefully that will occur. We only have really that one primary legislative agenda that our board hasn't yet approved. I know they will. We're going to bring our legislative agenda to them in January at the January Board of Health meeting. The other things that will likely, because you can't tell what's going to come up and won't come, and that will or won't come up, but we will include things related to tobacco, related to electronic cigarettes or other devices, related to all forms of tobacco. If something comes up with marijuana, and especially putting it into the Nevada Clean Indoor Air Act, that's something that we'll want to act on. So that's what I can provide to you for now. We have had more proposals in the past. Those haven't been successful. And so going with this block grant, again, at least the Interim Health Committee has agreed to endorse that and sponsor it as one of their 10 bills.
And that's the $5 per capita?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how is that? That's just a population number?
It's a population base. So, yes, off the census. Now, which census do we use? I don't want to use the 2010 census, and I don't want to wait for 2020 because we'll be undercounted. You know, our population proportionally continues to grow down here in Clark County compared to the rest of the state. So we'll try to figure out what that is. That's about $11 million to us. And that's really significant. It would be tied to our community health assessment, but the three issues that made it through the community health assessment, you were there, and the improvement plan were chronic diseases. Yeah, that's a good thing that we can help to pay for. Access to care, that, and just so you know, it's going, I'm doing a report to my board on our transition to primary care and towards a what could be a look-alike, so not an FQHC, but starting to look at how we provide that care. And the third one is health and public health funding. So if we'll be doing another one the next year or two, I know you probably, all of you will be involved in us trying to develop that, but I don't think any of us think that the access to care issue has started to diminish yet. So that'll end up being, I'm sure, top of one of our lists. If that's true, then we can help to spend some money on that, which includes our primary care system.
Thank you, Dr. Iser. Moving on to item number six, Chief Health Officer report.
I can let it go at that because okay. We're a little bit over time.
Thank you, sir. Moving to item number seven, facility advisory report.
this is really time for the committee to identify, are there any emerging issues that any of the members may have, or are there any particular items that the committee would like to see coming on the next agenda? I'm open to any ideas. And if you don't have any now, you can certainly email me later, and I'll make sure it gets on the agenda. So if anybody have any emerging issues? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 8, public comment. Time's devoted to the general public to discuss any matters that were not on the agenda. Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll move to adjournment. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion from Rob. Give me a second. Curtis, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate your time. Have a great week.